This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 250 for Wednesday, November 1st, 2017. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where I hang out with my friends and talk about geeky stuff, like this friend, Hammond Chamberlain. Hello, sir.
Hi, Joel. How you doing? I feel like I haven't been here in ages.
It has been ages. I've been. It seems like it's something I bring up quite a bit in the last couple of months, and that is how busy my regular co-hosting friends are. And it's a good thing because everybody's doing super fantastic stuff. I mean, you've got Beyond the Playlist, you've got Climb Out Network, Brockett and Lou both bought new homes, so that can be kind of time consuming.
And Soundography's kicking still.
Nice. Yeah, that's right. I almost forgot about Soundography. I didn't want to miss Climb Out Network. That's why I brought it up. Yeah. But yeah, so
Climb Out's doing really well. We're getting some good response on the shows. We're starting to get some activity from and interest from like actual groups of people who want to start using us as a resource and as a place to go as far as like a virtual sober living community. So things are looking good. I mean, we've only been at it like 2 months.
Yep. Still, that's good. I mean, the fact that other organizations are now looking to you or talking to you is good.
Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite things is the fact that, you know, most podcasts, when they get started, it takes a while for them to hit kind of a landmark, but I mean, not to be braggy or anything, but Climb Out's already hit $5,000 and we've only been out 2 months.
Nice. That's really cool. Good for you guys. I'm glad that something that is doing good for people is doing so well.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm happy for you obviously, but then there's the fallout of this, which is not bad, is that you get to help people.
Yeah, no, it's actually kind of a weird mix of the things I've been doing. I mean, I've got 20 years doing things in this field and then add, you know, 5 years of podcasting on top of it, and all of a sudden you've got the recipe for something unique and different and helpful.
Yeah. Yeah, and you hit that I remember talking about this with my friend Laura, who's a physiotherapist, who I've actually been a podcaster with. She used to be on Dating Digital podcast with me before she met her now husband, Gord. But she was talking. We were around our early 30s, and we were kind of talking about that 10,000-hour, 10 years in your profession kind of milestone, where it just becomes like second nature, where you know your stuff, you're confident in your stuff. Like when she's assessing a sprained ankle, she knows exactly how to treat it, you know, how it happened, like all that kind of stuff. And that confidence spills over into your success rates and all that kind of stuff. And I think, you know, what you were saying about having 20 years experience in, you know, the sobriety field and counseling and that kind of stuff. And then with the 5 years in podcasting, in terms of the number of hours that entails when you've got more than one show, like that pushes you into like that 10,000 hour kind of range, right? Not just like recording time, but like, you know, pre and post and, you know, scheduling and all those different things that go along with it. And I think that I would say that your experience and expertise, along with obviously your wife, are why it's doing so well. I don't, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm not surprised is basically what I'm getting at. Yeah, go for it.
It's interesting because the things I'm doing as far as post-production and who I'm getting as guests and who I'm reaching out to for resources, I never would have been able to do if I hadn't been doing booking for Current Geek, if I hadn't been doing Soundography and the editing that goes into that and the interview skills that I picked up from doing Beyond the Playlist for like 270 episodes now. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things that I wouldn't have the confidence and the wherewithal to do the things I'm doing now if I hadn't built that foundation.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. When I was doing the podcasting talk at HalCon last month, no, 2 months ago, I had mentioned a bunch of things that I feel I've become better at, having been doing podcasting for 5-6 years, something like that. I'd say seriously for 5. And it's incredible how doing a regular show, speaking, essentially speaking publicly, you don't have that, you know, butterfly feeling of being in front of a room of 100 people, but, you know, still, it's something you're putting out there, you know. And having that skill, I think, has translated into a lot of different things, whether it's a one-on-one business meeting, whether it's getting up in front of a crowd at a convention and speaking. And I think that people underestimate the business and interpersonal skills that you gain as a podcaster.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And I mean, I've been, let's be honest here. I've been seeking information from people my entire career. It's just a group of people I was usually asking questions of didn't want to give me any information.
Right.
And so now I'm using some of those same skills and some of that same wherewithal to actually have conversations who want to talk to me, which is still kind of mind boggling to me. Some of the people I've had on that actually wanted to be on. And I'm using some of these same skills, and they're telling me almost without fail that they're getting questions and they're having conversations they've never had before. And some of these people have been doing their jobs for 25, 30 years, and they're having unique interview experiences with me, and I'm a dude in my basement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It definitely ups that level of access too, which I think is cool. Like I've had some interactions recently with some young adults that have, we'll say, barriers to their education, whether it's personal, home-based, whatever. The way it was described to me was that they just don't have the chances that other people might have. And so I went and I did a talk at the McPhee Learning Center here in Dartmouth 2 weeks ago, and found it really rewarding, eye-opening, as well, but had that same, like, I was channeling my inner Hammond, you know, like I was thinking about how you interview people and how, and the things that you've said to me off mic about what you're doing with Climb Out and what it takes and all that kind of thing. Because to find out how this small group of like 10 to 14 kids were going to learn, I only had them for 2 hours. Like, how can I make the most out of their 2 hours so it's rewarding for them? But I can't just walk in like it's a regular classroom or a Halcon panel when you know that everybody's a giant nerd and everybody is there for a reason. They came to your panel because they know that you're going to be there. Whereas this is the reverse. These are the same group of kids that are kind of at this center, you know, every day after school. I'm the new kid, like I'm the new feature, you know, dude of the week that's coming in, or girl of the week that's coming in to talk. And, you know, like I had to kind of even break it down, and it wasn't so much individual because I didn't have time to get to know anybody that well. But I could almost break the group of 14 up into like three, you know, yeah. Like there's the keeners. There were the people that were there and engaged, but not necessarily interested in what I was doing. And that's fine because maybe they're not cartoonists, you know, like maybe they're painters or sculptors or have their own kind of fine art aspirations or whatever. And I'm in the field, but not really what they're interested in. Mm-hmm. And then there was the people that were uninterested and disruptive. It's like,
I got to tell you, working in, I've been doing some work with adolescents right now, 14 to 17 year olds.
Yeah. These were 12 to 16.
And work and finding a way to not give all your attention to the disruptive people is super hard.
Mm-hmm.
Because you find yourself telling them to stop and you spend all your time dealing with them than actually dealing with the people who are actually paying attention and listening.
Yep.
And even passively listening or actively listening, you end up ignoring them because of the three or four yahoos in the corner who are, you know, got to catch them all with their phones or whatever.
Yeah. Actually, I noticed closer to the end of the session. Well, 2 hours is also a long time to talk in front of people.
You know what the rule of thumb is with that, with the kids, right?
No.
You get 1 minute of attention for every year of their age.
Okay.
Which means at this point I'm good for almost an hour.
Nice. That's funny. I I got more than that from everybody. Yeah. No, I would say 30 to 40 minutes was pretty solid. Everybody was listening, but there wasn't much of a chance for it to get off the rails because I was basically asking a question and then explaining a little bit about what I do. Because, like, you know, I had all these weird facets. Like, I've got podcasting that's creative. I've got, you know, illustration and cartooning. And then I've also got graphic design. Like, I was explaining, like, hey, you could be an artist when you grow up, but there's all kinds of cool things that you can do. You don't have to be one thing. But what I found later on, one, I was getting tired. The people that were disinterested after about an hour and 20 really started to get disruptive. I handled it by just asking them to politely to just, like, I would even interrupt them and be like, no, look, just give me a second. I'm talking to, you know, insert other student's name. But what I found I was doing and feeling guilty of was the reverse. I wasn't giving a lot of attention to the people that were jumping up and down and being disruptive because I figured that was the best way to handle it. I was spending a little bit too much time with the people that were really liking my talk. You know, like, there's a couple of girls that were just, they were, one, talented. They were good at drawing. They were really interested in it. One person had asked very politely if she could draw on my computer because she'd never drawn on a computer before. And I was like, absolutely. Like, let's get you up and try this. And that required a little bit more one-on-one kind of, like, you know, because that, you know, how do you do everything in Photoshop? Like, how do I draw a line? Like, you know, there was a lot of, you know, a lot of learning going on. She caught on very quick. But then I found that I felt bad because there might have been some people that were in the middle that weren't quite so easy to tag as, oh, they're really enjoying this, and they might have missed out. And it kind of made me think, like, if I get to do that again, I would approach it a little bit, well, a lot differently. But there was a couple of little tweaks, I think, that I would get in there. But it's funny how, like, that many kind of personalities in a room, you know, where all of my experience with podcasting has been generally the people on my show want to talk to me. Yeah. Or the people that I'm in front of at HowlCon are there to talk to me and the other people on that panel. They might not necessarily be there for me, but there's a thread that ties us all together. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's difficult when you kind of have to try to figure out how to weave that on your own.
Yeah. It's hard. It's hard to create a tapestry of interest.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. The puns. Jeez. So one of the things that, that I've been up to this week, I know you mentioned it briefly in an email before the show. I'm going to let everybody know that we're going to go spoiler free on Stranger Things 2. Because I've been excited about this for a really long time, and I've been pulling that trick where I didn't watch the trailers. I barely looked at the posters. Like, I really went into this blind.
Yeah, so did I.
And you are about halfway through the season, and I am 2 episodes away from the end. So you're on like 5, 6. I'm on like 7, 8.
Yeah.
And I mean, if anybody out there has seen the first one, I highly recommend the second. There is something about this show that captures the nostalgia of the older 80s monster adventures, like Goonies and Ghostbusters. And there's a lot of actually direct Ghostbuster references in this, as a fun kind of like a side joke, but still manages to stay fresh. Like, you kind of get that little twinge of like, oh yeah, I remember this from these kind of movies. But then all of a sudden it's like, no, but this is Netflix and it's different. And they, like, everything else is just, you know, a new layer of things. Cause I mean, it's a new story. It's not like they're rehashing. It's not that, like, they're not retelling it, you know, like it's a brand new story. But it impresses me yet again. Is that the kind of feeling that you've been getting so far?
Yeah. I didn't look at anything. I'd actually forgotten it was coming out. I loaded Netflix one day and it said, hey, new episodes of Stranger Things. Do you want to watch them? And I said, of course I do. Mm-hmm. And so I started watching, and I actually had to force myself to go to bed because I was wrapped up in it. And I'm thinking, gee, if I don't make myself turn this off, I will stay up all night and watch this from beginning to end, like I did with 13 Reasons Why.
Right.
Which completely incapacitated me for like 2 more days after, because again, I'm old.
I, I've heard many good things about 13 Reasons Why.
It does an incredible job of raising awareness of a problem. Yeah. However, it kind of Willie Loman's the whole thing and glorifies it. So it's dramatic in that sense.
Yeah, I can see how that would be a problem. Because it's about, is it a spoiler to say what it's about?
No, it's about teen suicide.
Okay.
That's an easy thing to say.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I knew that. I just didn't know whether that was a secret. I hadn't had a really high interest in seeing it. So that was something I wasn't tuning out when people were talking about. It's like, whatever. I'm probably not going to watch it. I'll let them talk. But yeah, it sounds like it's really an important series. A lot of people are talking about it. And people that I know that have a range of interests, like people that just like dramas and just like, you know, indie films, love it. But then people that are sci-fi fans and like that tends to be their niche also like it.
No, it's very much worth your time. If you have kids, watch it with them because it's going to bring up questions. It's going to bring up situations that you're going to need to or talk about and be there with them. It's definitely something you watch with your parents or whatever. But at the same time, like I said, it does and does not do a very good job. It's as someone who works in a field
right.
of crisis work, it does add an element of romanticism and glory to the event. And that kind of whole they'll miss me when I'm gone mentality isn't a good thing to push. So watching it as an old man, I'm able to see that and work my way through it. But like Sydney, I would want her to watch that with people like me or Stacey.
Yeah. I can see that.
But anyway, back to Stranger Things.
Back to Stranger Things, yeah. Which is funny because it's this is also a series, and I'm going to speak about series one, so Stranger Things one, because that's been out forever, and hopefully everybody's seen it. But like there are monsters in that and people die and it's, you know, it's a horror series.
And actually, there's some pretty dicey, like, boy girl situations that happen in there.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And, but yet it's still fun and fandomy. If you know, like people are like, oh, the Demogorgon is amazing from series one. It's like, it eats people. Like
it's a flower with teeth.
Yeah.
It's Little Shop of Horrors made scary.
Yeah. Terrifying. Yeah.
Yes.
But
what I was going to say about this is, so in between season one and season two, I saw It.
Okay. Yeah.
And It did a very good job of doing basically Stranger Things in Stephen King horror land.
Right. Well, one of the kids from Stranger Things was in it, wasn't he?
Yes. Uh-huh. And it was hard to disjoint Stranger Things from It because it's set in a similar time frame. They are kids of a similar age. They are questing against a monster, which is a similar theme. There's lots of similarities to it, except it's a little grimmer, a little more grimmiest. I don't know.
I think more grim.
It works to the most grimmiest. What it does though, is it prepped me for this, not knowing that I was prepping because I totally forgotten this was happening.
Right.
So I fire up season two and I'm taken back to that world of fictional Hawkinsville or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that I'd missed that world a little bit. Mm. Now, I can say that Will, is that his name? The kid?
Yes.
He's going to be really messed up as an adult if he doesn't start seeking therapy. Everything bad is happening to Will.
To Will, yeah.
And I also, it's weird, the dude with the hair that we hated in season one.
Oh, what's her face's boyfriend? Steve Harrington?
Yeah, whatever.
Yep.
The guy that looks like, what's his face? From Arrested Development.
I don't know who he looks like from Arrested Development, but he reminds me of, who sings I Wear My Sunglasses at Night? Who's that?
Corey Hart.
Corey Hart. So he looked like he reminds me of Corey Hart. Like that's the stereotype he fits. Physically.
Development. I'm cheating.
While you're cheating. Speaking of all these people that are in it, and the child actors and stuff like that, if you thought the child acting in season one was good, then season two is over the top good.
Oh yeah, no. And the guy looks like Jason Bateman, a cheap Jason Bateman.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But what I was going to say is you feel bad for him in season two. They've turned him into a sympathetic character, which takes some doing because he was a jerk in season one.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because he played the popular, like the popular high school boy, self-centered, all that kind of stuff. Well, and yeah. I think what you're seeing too, which is something I love about the fact that it's a series and not a movie, is or a series, like it's a series of television episodes or Netflix episodes as opposed to two movies. And that is that you have this time for this traumatic event of weird supernatural shit happening in season one and how it has curved the characters in season two. And again, I don't want to get into anything specific.
No, I can't say though that what I've really been enjoying is seeing the character growth.
Yes. Both in,
what's his face? His sister and Jason Bateman.
Boy. Everybody. Across the board. Really, it's across the board. I've had some disappointments, but it's not been about characters. It's been about story.
And I do like the new characters they've introduced too. Samwise.
Oh yeah. Well, the two, it took me a minute to recognize, Paul, what's his last name? He was on Mad About You. Reiser, Paul Reiser. Cause at the end of the credits, like when they roll these really cool credits, it's all, you know, like very 80s looking, Winona Ryder is the first name, and then they list all the other actors, and then at the very end it says with Sean Austin and Paul Reiser, and I was like, Paul Reiser. So I recognize the name, but I'm struggling to remember who he is. And then of course in the first episode they show all the new people, and you're like, oh my god, like it completely. It's not like he's changed that much. He's a little heavier than he was. But there's something about the fact that just the shape of his face has changed and then he's got gray hair. And I recognized not even his voice. I recognized his delivery. I recognized the way that he spoke. And I was like, God, where do I know this guy from? And it wasn't until like at least the second episode where I went, oh, right. I felt so stupid for not knowing him.
I just went to the Stranger Things Internet Movie Database page. Mm-hmm. And on it, it has seasons. And it has 4, 3, 2, and 1. Does that mean they've already been renewed for two seasons?
Don't know. For the very reason that I mentioned at the beginning, I avoid everything. I don't read articles. I don't nothing. Once this season is over, I will probably go to say like, hey, is this picked up for another season? And I know that Lou doesn't care about spoilers. So even if he hasn't cut up next week when I talk to Lou, we might kind of dive into the whole thing. And plus, it's also been. It'll have been 2 weeks since it came out at that point. So I feel like a safer time to talk specifics. But I would imagine it's been picked up for another season. I can't, like, the internet exploded on Friday when Stranger Things 2 came out. Like, that is all anyone was talking about, to the point where I had to just not be online. I'm sure that it's got a third season. I would be surprised if it didn't. I don't know because I haven't finished it, so I don't know whether they wrap it up in a nice little bow, whether it's more of a Empire Strikes Back sort of situation. Like, I don't really know. There's a lot going on, although I can tell you that. And I'm really happy with it. I've got a few little nitpicks that I'll get into in a spoiler episode, but other than that, like the overall feeling of just immersing yourself in Hawkins, like you said, this world that they've built. It's like you're going back to see old friends. It's like watching Star Wars for the 14th or 15th time, you know, like it's
old friends who need a lot of therapy though.
Yeah. Everyone
in that town needs to spend some time with a good therapist.
Yeah. Oh man.
Sheriff, Winona, Paul Reiser, all the kids, even the kids' parents, all of them just need some good quality time with a qualified therapist.
I do find it amusing how well the four boys that we met in season one, despite all the crazy stuff that's happened to them, several of them, when they talk about this stuff, they talk about the supernatural stuff. Like they're talking about dogs and cats and they talk about it like, you know, well, they use, references from D&D to describe what they're seeing. Cause no one has a name for this stuff. It's all just like, what the hell is that? But they've been playing D&D. So that's how the Demogorgon got its name. And so it's not really what they are. It's just that this is the,
It's a shorthand they've developed.
The analogy that they're using to try and describe, like, well, how can we beat it, or what do we do, or what does it look like? Does it remind you of anything? Like, what do you call this thing? So it can be, it's also a tool for the audience so that you can actually identify things. But I love how, like, all the adults are just freaking the hell out. And the kids run for their lives like everybody else. But when they're in a room and safe and they're talking about these things, they're talking about it like scientists, like, you know, they're trying to.
So I'm going to delicately dance around the one thing so far that's really bothered me.
Okay.
Okay. So one kid finds a thing.
Yes.
Okay. The fact that kid doesn't come forth with the more knowledge of that thing before something horrible happens to a family pet.
Mm-hmm.
Upset me, because he's their friend and he should be letting them know that he found the thing.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that, and that's a theme, the whole, I think the dynamic in this series right now with that, the group, with their party, they call it the party, cause that's what they call the D&D thing. Mm-hmm.
It's basically a raiding party from WoW.
Yeah, from WoW. Yeah. But the inter-party trust is the theme, I think, that they're trying to develop, and how it fluctuates this season. Mm-hmm. And I think that's that played a key factor. I'm going to stop you there, though, because I feel a little bad.
No. It could be anything that they found.
Yes.
And it happened to any family pet. So yeah. I haven't.
But that is one of the key moments that I was spoiled on. Unintentionally. I know that the person meant well and was upset or whatever. But it really kind of ticked me off, because, and having seen the rest, like past that point in the show, I was less upset after than I was before, but I almost got spoiled a couple times, just near misses. Thankfully, no images. People were not posting spoiler images. I saw one person post some stuff on Instagram, and they were smart and polite enough to post the, you know how you can do those Instagram series where you can post like, you know, 3 and 4 images in one kind of pocket.
Mm-hmm.
The first image was a really cool, smoky looking, creepy thing with text in the middle that said Stranger Things 2 spoilers with an arrow. Right. And I was like, awesome. Skip it. Like, I just, thank you. Thank you for not throwing that in my face. And cause as a visual artist, like, I, as fast as I can scroll through a Facebook feed or a Twitter feed or Instagram, I will still see the image, and it will be burned in my brain, and I'll be like, shit, not about Stranger Things 2, but like, just insert something else. Like, I didn't want to know that character died. I appreciate that, you know, Game of Thrones, that you've put this out there and then you're a fan and this painting took you hours and that's wonderful. But some people haven't seen that episode yet. And yes, I know you're not saying what happened in words, but it's almost worse, because people don't expect to see it in an image. They expect to see, like, oh my God, I can't believe, in a text form, right? And I saw a lot of that on Instagram. But people were talking about the ending of season 2, which I don't know what happens, on Friday. The bloody show came out Friday. Like, what did you do other than take the day off and watch 9 episodes of Stranger Things 2 from breakfast until midnight? Like, and in what point, even if you have done that, and good on you, like, I mean, that's amazing that you can do that and still enjoy the series if that's how you want to watch it. And I know that binging is like as a new thing that people like to do. But after you're finished, what in you possesses you to think, oh, everyone else on the internet has done the exact same thing that I've done. Surely no one's had to work today, or maybe didn't want to burn through the newest, greatest thing on Netflix in months, you know, and have it all be over in 24 hours or less than that. And so I'm here trying to avoid spoilers all weekend long, because half the world finished the series in a day and a half. And I'm like, guys, like, I'm enjoying watching one episode a day. I mean, I'm not going to be done until next week. You know, like, I can't be off Twitter for that long. Like, just, you know, I appreciate people want to talk about it. And I've caught myself a number of times saying, like, oh man, I know what I'd say right now if I was on Facebook, and I don't do it because I don't want to spoil people. But it's one of those things where it's like, just say how much you're enjoying it. You can say that without being specific.
Okay. I'll change the topic a little bit. The guy who plays the new guy, what's his name? Billy, the guy in the blue Camaro.
Yes.
His name is Darcy Montgomery.
Okay.
And he recently did a film called Better Watch Out. And it's kind of it's a Christmas themed kind of psychological thriller horror movie that I got to see at a special screening the beginning of the month. The director was there. We did a Q&A. I'm actually interviewing the director later this month actually this weekend.
I'll have to let Lou know because Lou talked about that a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. And he's in the film. He plays the boyfriend of the babysitter in Better Watch Out.
Okay.
So I was interested to see him play something different because he plays a very, you know, stereotypical 80s metalhead dirtbag kind of car guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what happens to him or if anything happens to him at all. But it was nice seeing him in something other than this film because that means he's doing more. And with this under his belt with Stranger Things, it means he will be doing a lot more.
Yeah.
Maybe by by association, Better Watch Out will get some good press because it's a damn fine movie. And I didn't have any idea what I was getting before I watched it. And when I got it, it made me walk away with a lot of really significant thoughts about culture and kids and how information is being fed to the kids and how they process it and how they deal with it. So it's really good. And I can't wait to talk to the director.
Nice. Yeah, that's really cool. It's funny. I didn't, Lou didn't mention anything about that. He just mentioned that it was like, he really enjoyed how pleasantly surprised he was.
Mm-hmm.
By it.
No, it's fantastic. It's a fantastically surprising film.
Yeah.
But for me, I looked at it as, and especially since the director was there and we were able to get to the hows and the what fors from him, we were able to kind of suss out that information. And that interview will be coming out sometime in November with Beyond the Playlist.
Nice. That's very cool. Very, very cool. Have you, just out of curiosity, have you ever thought about teaming up with someone on Beyond the Playlist? Like if there's some sort of crossover where, you know, like I'm just using Lou as an example, but like if someone like Lou or other podcaster in your circle was like super, super big into the same film or the same album and you had an opportunity to interview, you know, like let's say like a drummer from your favorite band or something like that, would you, you know, if that path was also crossed with say Brian Ibbett from, you know, with you in Soundography, would you bring that? Would you be open to bringing that person into Beyond the Playlist to do a dual interview, or is Beyond the Playlist like your sanctum?
So here's the funny part: is this has actually had come up three times in 2015, because I was doing the Booth at the End podcast with Joel Robertson,
right?
And we interviewed Chris Kubasik, who was the writer creator. I interviewed Xander Berkeley, and I interviewed Abby Miller. All three of them were involved in the show one way or another. And Joel was supposed to be in on the interviews with me. And all three times he chickened out or was unavailable. So it didn't work out. I'm totally interested in doing, you know, other things, but it's never been anything that kind of cropped up.
Huh. Interesting. That's weird because like, I mean, if I don't really know if there's anything that crosses over with you and I, but like I would jump at the chance. I don't know how much I would talk. I'd be worried about like, it's like, all right, we're in the master's domain now. the interview is happening. And it's like, I want to participate, but I also, you know, you have that podcast moment. You're like, oh shit, right. I'm on the show. I'm not just listening to it.
Yeah, exactly. They can hear me laughing.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I can see, for example, I mean, one of the, like, you know, when you get into the world of podcasting after a little while, you start to have your favorites and you start to kind of like, you start to think people from one show would really like people from this other show that you really like. Now, granted, I know that you guys are friends, but I would love to see hear a Beyond the Playlist episode with a focus on something where you and Tom Merritt had like a mutual interest or really excited to talk to, you know, ex-director or, you know, author or whatever. And I like that kind of thing. Like when you get two people with those kind of interview skills, you think, oh man, you know, like, and then you're like, all right, how do we form Voltron? You know, like, okay, who's going to form the legs? Who gets to be the head? But then you got five people on a podcast interviewing one guest and it feels really audacious. But
and that's the thing that I've heard a couple interviews, and there's a show I've listened to, and they're great guys. And when they do their gig, it's three of them, when they do their thing, it's hysterical, it's off the rails, it's irreverent, and it still gets the point across. I mean, it's magical how they can kind of pull it together. But you take that chemistry and you put them interviewing somebody, and sometimes you feel like the guest is just overwhelmed. And that would be something I'd be very concerned about.
Yeah.
If I were having more than one person asking questions, because then it turns more into less into a conversation and more into an interrogation.
Yeah. It's something we struggle with on Comics Coast to Coast too, is that, you know, we're dealing with sometimes artists that are relatively shy, or if they're not shy, then they clam up when they start to talk about their work and things like that. So we kind of have to poke them with some questions, but we try to keep it as conversational as possible. And I think that's Brian's trick, is like, the more conversational you keep it, the less like an interrogation it feels like. Yeah.
And I think that's what Brian does. He'll say things like, and then Winnie the Pooh farted.
Yeah.
And you know, just stops. And yeah, you're like, yep.
Yep. Well, and sometimes you can kind of coax conversations out, because like, he might do that and it'll be like, oh, well, that's a really weird non sequitur. But like, wait a minute, this artist maybe worked for Disney. And then all of a sudden they, oh yeah, this one time when I was working on this Winnie the Pooh animated cartoon, you're like, yes, Brian, yes. Like, yeah. you never know. Because I find that a lot of the artists that we talk to have such a wide range of experience, that you never know what kind of thing is going
to. And the one thing I can say about Brian is his non sequiturs, usually there's a method to the madness.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I've known Brian long enough to know that. And I've listened to him long enough to know that most of his non sequiturs aren't really non sequiturs. He's just taking creative tilt at a conversation change.
Yeah. It makes you feel like podcasting with a cat, though. Love you, Brian. Love
it's
you.
It's a cat.
Yeah, it's the Garfield. It's the Garfield of podcasting segue.
But he's good at that, and I admire that skill. Actually, there are people who I listen to who do interviews, and those interviews I feel like are better than mine. I've listened to some of Scott Johnson's interviews with the Blizzard folks, and I'm dumbfounded by some of the conversations they get into.
Yeah. I think part of that too is because, not to get all like inside Frog Pants baseball, but I feel like with people, I mean, my favorite example of this is, Mark Turpin, Terpster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's on a podcast like The Instance, or he's on something with Scott, and he's goofing it up and he's being all handball, and he's hilarious and he's smart. Like, there's also great big knowledge bombs and stuff that drop. But then you get, every once in a while, there'll be a serious conversation, or they'll have an interview with like a Blizzard guest on The Instance or something like that. And, you know, there's a window, or especially another example would be, you know, Terpster on a panel at Nerdtacular or in any other, you know, I've seen a couple of video panels and stuff like that online. And it's incredible how you can see the switch kind of go, uh-oh, business Terpster. And he's an incredibly smart individual. And
yep.
And it comes out, you know, and you get so used to, especially with Scott making, you know, the dad fart jokes and all the different things he does on Current Geek and whatnot, like mispronouncing Garrett Weinzierl's name, things that I find very funny and endearing. But then you put him in a room with, you know, Medsen or something like that about a serious interview, and it really hits a different note, and you realize, you remember, not that you realize, you get reminded, like, underneath all this entertainment are some real real skills in front of a microphone, and, you know, in terms of podcasting and interviewing and conversation and things like that. And it's funny, I don't know what it is regionally, but I find a lot of the people that I know from Utah have this skill.
I've got a hunch, but I'll keep it to myself.
Maybe we'll talk about it off mic.
It's a very pointed hunch. But what I was going to say, though, is like, you take someone like Mark Barron. He's named his show WTF. So on the surface, you think, what the hell am I going to listen to?
Yeah.
But dude knows how to interview.
Yeah. Yeah. And I noticed, I don't remember his name at all, but he's a tech podcaster. somebody that I bumped into, he was a guest on Twit one time, and I ended up following one of his shows, and cause he was kind of abrasive on Twit, and but I kind of liked what he was saying cause he was funny. And, you know, you go to follow his stuff and you're just like, okay, so I understand and I can see through the bullshit that he's a very smart person. I didn't like the frosting. Like, I didn't like all the aggressive, you know, behavior and the kind of, he's kind of a shit disturber. And so it wasn't my flavor, but it was really interesting at that point in my podcasting, kind of like the listening education, for me to be able to, like, not just completely dismiss him as like, okay, this guy's terrible. It's like, no, he's not terrible. He's just not your style, but you can still see the intelligence in all of it. Yeah. And, it's weird when you can kind of dissect things.
And I've had that moment with one Mr. Justin Robert Young, where when my first interactions with him, I was like, ah, what is this guy? I mean, what's his end game? And then after talking to him, after getting to know him, after spending time with him, after like seeing how he works, he's brilliant. And his end game is world domination. And I'm okay with that.
Yep. No, me too. I had a very, very brief interaction with him, this year in particular, but, I would still very much like to be not necessarily a fly in the wall, but I'd love to be in a small conversation. A lot of times when I've run into Justin Robert Young, he's been in a, you know, he's got a circle of 12 people, you know, around him at like a social gathering or something like that. So it's hard. I find in some cases when people like that are like always on, but I would love, actually, you know what? One of my favorite conversations with Justin was your interview with him.
Oh, well, thank you.
No, you're welcome. I don't remember what episode that was, but people should go check it out.
I've done two. I've done.
There were two.
Episode two. And then a year in, I did a follow up and just, hey, thanks for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause I think it was the second one. Cause we were talking about the card game. Cause I listened to that twice. Mm-hmm. Because of the knowledge bomb drops for Kickstarters and all that kind of stuff. And again, it's one of those situations where, like, you know, when he's not, you know, dressed up like a 70s newscaster up in front of a crowd, like we're talking about all these people that I'm sure the people that listen to the Citadel Cafe have no idea who we're talking about, but this is the thing,
Maybe they love you. They know who I am and tolerate me once in a while.
But, I see what you did there.
These are people who we look up to and we kind of admire. So pushing them up the hill a little bit to see what we listen to and like isn't a bad thing. I don't think it's a bad thing at all. Like for retro movie geeks, I went to this movie. The Movie Podcast Network had a meetup here in Salt Lake at the beginning of the month. I met some amazing people who do shows that I had not been exposed to. And now I have a whole new batch of podcasts I listen to because they do really entertaining, fun, all kind of Universal Monsters cast and sci-fi movie cast and all these kind of things that are right in my wheelhouse. And I now have a whole slew of new shows I'm catching up on. And these are people who I'm local to. These are all local guys. And I now have a new set of friends and, you know, a new resource to tap for guests and information and networking possibilities and all kinds of stuff.
Nice. Nice. I did the local podcast thing sort of with a couple of guys at HalCon. I wish there was more women on the panel. I'm sure there are female podcasters here in the city, but I know there are. My friend Megan is one. Not the Megan that was on this show, although she's hopefully going to be back more often, but my friend Megan Clarkson, she does a podcast about eating disorders and general nutrition and health and wellness and all that kind of stuff. And I don't even know if episode one was out when HalCon was out. So she wouldn't necessarily be someone up in front of a panel saying like, hey, this is how I podcast. But in the future, especially because HalCon next year, she will have a year under her belt. I would love them to have, you know, a more diverse, you know, panel up there. I haven't found anybody locally that I like super connect with. Like I liked all the guys that I was up on stage with. But I like the topics were so different and they're not really anything that interests me. So outside of podcasting itself as a theme, there was nothing that really kind of tied us together. But I'm curious, like I'd like to try to find more local people doing stuff like that.
I feel like as an interviewer, yes, I can admit that I am good. I am able to approach topics, with an amount of, especially with the show I do, mm-hmm. I approach the amount of knowledge that I feel like I can ask the inside baseball questions with some kind of credibility, with some kind of gravitas behind it, because either I've done it, I know it, I've seen it, I've worked with it, whatever. So I'm asking these questions from a place of knowledge. But the thing is I've listened to lots of interview shows, and every single one of them, like, oh man, that's good. Mm-hmm. I got to remember that. That's really good.
Yeah. I need to listen to more interview show myself, 'cause it's a skill that I want to work on, especially because not a lot, but more so in the last year, as lives become more complicated, as Brian does more stuff with Dragon Con, I end up at the helm of Comics Coast to Coast more times than I used to be. So I need to kind of up that game. Like, this show is usually more conversational with friends, but like each episode of Comics Coast to Coast, with the exception of people that we bring back on the show for like the third or fourth time, it's always the first time talking to that person. So you don't have that rapport. So there's a lot of prep, and you have to like steer the conversation and watch the time and all this kind of stuff. So it's something I need to be a little bit more aware of, because one thing that's nice about doing an interview show, we mentioned this earlier about how it's kind of complicated and you don't want to feel like you're ganging up on the guest. But something that's nice about having three hosts is that if Brian has been super busy that week, he can just let me know and I can kind of pick up the slack. He can still host the show, but I can mm-hmm. do a little bit more on the research side, or vice yeah. versa. I can just message people and be like, dude, I am buried by, you know, HalCon. I will be there and I can have an intelligent conversation about art, but if there's going to be specific questions about this person's career, like, I'm going to have to leave that to you guys, 'cause I just don't have time to read their 3 years of webcomics, you know, to
so
prep.
So I will give everyone the secret that I use. This is free interview tip. I ask every question in relation to them. I don't ask them about their I don't ask them directly about their project. It's, how did you prepare for your project? Mm-hmm. How were you affected by this outcome of this project? What was it like for you doing blah, blah, blah? Mm-hmm. Everything is focused around them. I never say, dude, that album rocked. Tell me about it.
Yeah.
Or I never say, oh man, I really enjoyed that role you played of this person. What was that like? Or you worked with so-and-so. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that. It's always kept on them from their point of view, and it's always focused very centrically and purposely on them.
Yeah. I mean, asking how an actor prepared for that specific role, as opposed to, you know,
tell me about the time you played the dog. You know, just
like a saxophone. No, wait, no, that's not the right. That's not how that works.
That's right. Every interview, every question is somehow planted firmly in STEM centric.
Hmm. That's a good tip. So how did you feel? No, I'm not going to do that. But we mentioned a couple of people earlier. One of them was Tom Merritt, who is a podcaster and a journalist. He does a tech show called Daily Tech News Show, which I highly recommend everybody check out if you like tech news, or if some of the conversations on that show have become a lot broader too. So I would,
speaking of broad, I was on that show. Yeah. So that tells you they've dug into the barrel.
That was a good episode, by the way. I think I mentioned this online. I think that to date is my favorite explanation of the Climeout Network.
Oh, thank you.
It was a really good, concise, but also detailed explanation of precisely what you guys are setting out to do. So when people ask about it, I go, you should go listen to DTNS. I can't remember what 1,000 episode it is, but it's a lot. But the reason why I bring Tom up again is because I am reading Pilot X, which is a novel, one of many that Tom has written. And it's been a really unique experience, because I like sci-fi, I like fantasy. I don't generally like time travel, unless it's something classic like Back to the Future. I tend to steer away from time travel. Actually, I don't like planes either, so that statement is true. But Doctor Who, never really been into it. For more reasons than just the time travel, but it's never been my thing. Any episode of Star Trek, The Next Generation, whether it was time travel, hated it. Because ultimately you watch the same 15-minute sequence over and over again for 45 minutes, drove me nuts. Anyway,
I was about to say that one where they're playing poker in the time loop.
Oh God. Yeah, exactly. So, but the reason I bring all this up is because, now granted, I'm only a few chapters in, but it's enough to really kind of set the tone, set the premise. And Pilot X is about a time traveling, pilot in a spaceship that does the time traveling. So it's not a telephone booth. It's a proper spaceship. But it has been a unique experience for me because this is the first time I've ever read a novel by someone I actually know, someone I've had a beer with, you know, someone that I've hung out with at Nerdtacular, and have spoken to, you know, on several podcasts. And it's a really, really cool feeling, but it's also, I find weird. And I'm curious if, have you read anything by a friend?
Yeah, I've read Pilot X, and I've also read both of J.F. DuBose books.
Okay, so here's my...
But here's the other interesting thing is I've actually, what's really weird is when I'm watching a TV show, I'm like, oh, I interviewed them. Or I'm listening to a CD with my kids, and I'm like, oh yeah, I interviewed that drummer.
Yeah.
I'm friends with that person now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a unique experience. And what I find really weird, and it's not to a discredit, it's a compliment, I think, is that I'll say, okay, I really need to take a break from the studio. I'm going to grab Tom's book and go down to the waterfront. I'm going to sit there. I'm going to read for a couple hours in the sunshine. It's a beautiful day.
Do you call your bathroom the waterfront too? Because that's what I do.
Nope. I live on the ocean. I know it's hard to comprehend from you Utah desert people, the nomads out there. But no, there's an ocean within a 10, not even if it's a 5-minute walk for me to be waterfront. So I went down there on Saturday and I read Tom's book for a bit. And when I pick it up, I'm registering. It is Tom's book. He sent this to me in the mail. He signed the inside cover and it's really cool. And then I sit down and I read and I completely forget that it's Tom that's written it because I'm immersed in the story. I would like to think it's a compliment to the writing and to the world that he's building. And I think that's kind of where I am is like, he's really just now for me established kind of like world building and character and path. And the hook is in, like, I'm definitely looking forward to reading it.
You had that experience. As I was reading it, I was imagining Tom's voice, like current geeking it through or DTNS it through because Tom's voice is in my head. So it's kind of like when you get an email from somebody, you kind of do your impression of them in your head.
Yeah. See, now I don't think I could listen to Tom read the audiobook. That I would not be able to pull DTNS out of my head. Like I don't think I would be as immersed listening to the audiobook as I am reading the book as it stands, because I'm totally sucked in. And
Justin read the book.
What's that?
What if Justin did the audiobook?
I think if anybody that I knew in that circle, like it would have, like if it would have to be somebody that I don't know and listen to on a podcast, I think that would be it. Like if I recognize the voice, then I wouldn't be able to do it. If it was another podcaster who I didn't know, you know, like somebody from CNET or somebody else that I just don't have a more than daily now with Daily Tech News Show, because there's other shows that I listen to, you know, in that pipe. But like all that kind of stuff, I think is just, it's too ingrained in my brain, you know, because like when I tune into DTNS or tune into Current Geek, like it's really very much like home. Like it's something I do at night when I'm making dinner, you know, like it's a part of like my evening ritual. So I associate it as like it's a comfort thing. And I don't know, like I'm curious to listen to it after. Like after I finish reading the book, I might get the audio version and try and listen to some stuff that Tom's written and also read. But I have to say, like the unique take on time traveling so far, this whole idea of a time war, the basic gist of it so far is this Pilot X, there's been a time war. He's the only survivor. People are skeptical because, of course, there's no proof. Yet they've all been warned of this person's arrival, and then it flashes back and you're like learning how Pilot X got to be Pilot X and what he's gone through and his social structure and the different missions that he's gone on. So, you know, that's where I am right now. And like, it's really, really well written. And what's weird, and I don't mean this to sound like a slight, it doesn't sound like Tom.
And that's the thing I actually realized too, was he was writing with a different voice and different words, and he reached into his writer bag and pulled out
yes in a very good way.
Yeah. No, all kudos.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's just because
it's the same thing with God in the Shed. I read God in the Shed and I kept thinking, okay, this is a JF DeBoe book.
Yeah.
And I kept hearing JF in my head when I'm reading it. But the thing is he's using words and phrases and descriptions and sentence rhythm that JF doesn't do.
Yeah.
For once in that book, did he criticize his own artwork?
Yes. Yeah. Well, and I can even argue to wrap it all up, that when you listen to Daily Tech News Show versus Current Geek, you definitely get two different flavors of Tom Merritt. Yep. And so I'm now curious. I mean, obviously I'm going to finish Pilot X. I'm curious to read more from him. And I'm wondering now if I'm going to hear yet another voice, a different voice, but still not Tom, or whether I'm going to read one going like, oh yeah, okay, this is Tom, you know?
I had to stop reading Dan Brown books because he has a formula.
Oh, he does. Yeah. Don't compare like Dan Brown and Tom.
I stopped reading because there's a formula.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
A lot of authors have formulas, and the authors that I continue to listen to continue to read and experience are ones that do not stick to a formula. They push themselves as creators. They push themselves as world builders. They push themselves as creative forces. And that's where I find the enjoyment. Yes, I recognize the name of the author. And with that name, I know I'm getting something unique and entertaining. And I think Tom fits into that unique and entertaining bucket because he does it with his shows. Cord Killer Tom is not DTNS Tom. That is not Current Geek Tom.
Yeah, no, that's very true. Very true. I know what you mean about that. Christopher Moore is an author that I really like, and he does that. It's not a formula. It's his books are tied together, but only in so the major villain in one is a side character in another, like a mention, it's the same universe, kind of like a Stephen King sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But his books are so wildly different, that you don't feel like you're from them. I made the mistake of reading some Dan Brown stuff, but I went backwards. Like I read the Da Vinci Code and Angels and Demons. And then I went back and read some of the other books. But unfortunately what you get there is if you read them in order, you'll still see that same pattern, but you'll see the author getting better at it. Uh-huh. Whereas if you read like Digital Fortress and some other stuff, like I think Digital Fortress is the one where I bailed and that I realized, oh, wait a minute. I know who the villain is because it's the same relationship.
Yeah, kind of like he has the same. He has the daughter, the dad, the cop,
the mentor.
The mentor that goes sideways.
Yep.
The unknown assailant that's controlled by somebody else that's bigger and more powerful. I mean, it's all there.
It's in all every the same. Single one of them. Yeah. I did like the one with the alien thing under the ice or whatever that ended up being. I don't remember how that book ended, but I did enjoy that one.
That one was okay. I did okay with that one too.
I don't remember what it was called.
I remember the cover of the paperback had a boat over ice and a thing deep, but yeah.
Anyway, you can go to tommerrittbooks.com. That's two R's and two T's in Merritt, and check out the offerings that Tom has up there. Pilot X is currently what I'm reading. And I would keep an eye on the books that Tom is making in the future.
Yes. So I'll just throw this out too. The sister in Stranger Things. We're going back to that for a second.
Oh, are we? Okay.
She's 20. She's the youngest looking 20-year-old I've ever seen.
Oh, really? Like
in real life, she's 20.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I would have pegged her as a teenager playing like an 18 or 19 year old playing like a 15-year-old, but I didn't realize she was in her 20s.
Yeah, she's 20.
Wow. How did you look? I haven't looked. How old are the actual kids? I know that they're supposed to be 12 in terms of their age.
Let's see.
Like 12 to 14, but
I'll look at Broken Will because he'll be a good barometer, I think.
Well, all four of them would be the same age, I think. Well, all four of the characters would be the same age. I'm not sure about the actors.
Okay, Will, he's 13.
Oh, wow, geez. Okay, well, I mean, you usually see really young-looking 15-year-olds playing younger, just because the acting chops are a little bit better.
The kid that was in It, he is 15.
Okay. So, I mean, they look older now. Like, they definitely, a couple of them, like the kid that plays Dustin has hit his growth spurt. Like, he's definitely a lot longer than he was. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff. I'm looking forward to diving a little bit more into that when I'm done with the series, so I can actually find out what's happening and learn a little bit more about the actors. Maybe, actually, one thing I do want to look into is any of the other work that they may have done. I know the guy that plays Jim Hopper is the new Hellboy. So that's going to be cool. I think he's a good pick for it. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Citadel Cafe. You can go to thecitadelcafe.com, check out the show notes, links to all the different stuff that we've talked about today. Music for the show was composed by Kevin MacLeod. Email the show, let us know what you're thinking about Stranger Things at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com, and find us by name on Twitter and Facebook. And last but not least, go to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe and check out what's going on over there. If you enjoy the show, if you get some value out of it and you want to put some value back in, then you can become a patron for, I think it's a minimum of $1 a month, or you can go $1 per episode, or whatever you want, whatever your budget allows. And that money gets put directly back into the things that we do with the community. It goes to keeping the website up, to, I mean, when I have to put some time and energy into redesigning the website or adding a new feature, it covers all that kind of stuff. So if you want to head over to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe and become a patron, then you can join us in the patron-only Discord chat, which has been a lot of fun and a lot of activity on the Minecraft server as well, for those of you that are into that kind of thing. And for anybody that's been playing that has kids, something that was put out there as a request was the opportunity to download the Minecraft world that myself and Adam and Alistair and everybody has been putting together. And because there's no kids on the server, people that are playing, their kids are asking, like, hey, can we see this world? Can we show us this and show us that? So instead of that being something that we do online, we're going to make the world download available so that people with kids can pop in and they can adventure around and see the different stuff that everybody has built on the server, because it's really getting quite robust. So it's been a lot of fun. So that, look for that in the next little while if you're already a patron. And thanks to all the patrons that are out there already. I really appreciate it. Hammond, where can people find you and your awesome work online?
I will say, let's find it at Climb Out Network on Twitter, and climboutnetwork.com is the thing that we do. And then at jhammondc on Twitter will bring you to everything else I do.
You've been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.